Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Shuttlepod at the Disco. This is our fourth episode looking back at Discovery episodes. Today is Monday, October 16th. We're going to be talking about the fifth episode of Discovery that aired yesterday, Sunday, October 15th. I'm Kayla Iacovino, and I am joined by my Shuttlepod crew members, Brian Drew.
Hello, everybody.
And Matt Wright.
Hey, guys.
And I would be remiss if I didn't also mention that the Shuttlepod podcast is brought to you by the humans at Bye Bye Robot, purveyors of fine art from the future. Bye Bye Robot sells officially licensed Star Trek art made by multiple artists in many different styles at prices starting around $25. Go to byebyerobot.com to learn more. All right, so today we're going to be talking about episode number 5 of Star Trek Discovery, which was called Choose Your Pain. And it was written by Kemp Powers, with story by Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts and Kemp Powers, directed by Lee Rose. So guys, let's just do our quick roundtable here. Just brief reactions. What did we think of this episode? How about you, Matt?
I really liked it. I think it's really cool that we're finally getting somewhere, starting to see the story unfold. We learned a lot more sort of about Lorca's character, and we sure learned more about Burnham's character, like as her own, you know, compass, that kind of character, her moral character, you could say. It was pretty great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was easily the best episode of the series, like, to me, by far. I really, I enjoyed this one.
Do you think it was a lot better than the last episode?
I do. And I did think there was definitely a progression. Like, I think there's been an improvement week to week, but I think this was a large improvement over the previous couple, I would say.
I definitely think it's my favorite as well. Maybe not as much of a quantum leap from the last one as in your opinion, Brian, but I just still do agree is it's my favorite so far. And to me, it felt like the most Trek episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I know everyone sort of has their own definition of what that means, but you know, for me, it felt like the most Trekkie. We were dealing with ethics.
Yes,
you know, we were
absolutely.
We were examining both storylines where we follow Lorca and we follow Burnham. We're finally dealing with the ethics of the tardigrade, and also looking back into Lorca's past and sort of questioning the ethics there and seeing how that you know, affects things.
Yeah, we learned quite a bit about Gabriel Lorca in this episode, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
I felt like, you know, I really feel like with each episode, and I feel like I've said this too every time we've had a podcast, but with every episode, it's like this is more and more real for me. I almost want to say, oh, this was you know, our first real episode, but I said that last week. You know, the first two episodes were prologue, and then we had our pilot,
yeah,
and then we had our first real episode last week. But it still felt very transition-y, you know. It's this whole serialized storytelling thing that everything just feels really drawn out. It's like you have to wait until you're like, oh, that was a standalone episode of Star Trek. You know, I feel like we're waiting
it
for
was.
That.
It was. But that kind of was. Last night kind of was a standalone.
It was the most standalone Trek episode for me so far, for sure.
Yeah, it kind of had a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, definitely more so than like last episode. Last episode, they kind of threw all this stuff at us and left us, it was on a very down note. You know, all these horrible things that happened to the tardigrade.
Yep. Yeah, it was kind of hard to watch.
For me, too, it's part of, again, this, you know, I've been hoping as we've gone along that we're going to follow Burnham out of the, you know, grit, to turn a phrase, and into the light. Because she started in this very depressive state, and we're watching her sort of recover from that. And it seems like the tone of the show is getting slightly lighter as we go. I really liked at the beginning of the episode, Burnham is actually seeking help from Tilly. She opened up to her really, I think, more than we've seen her do at all. And that was, to me, another sign that like we're going in this direction of lightening up.
Yeah, I actually found Tilly a little unknowing in the beginning, although she's likable. And I liked her a lot more, like, in this episode, and her sort of interactions with Burnham were really great.
She's still being sprinkled in lightly, because Tilly's the kind of character where a little bit of Tilly can go a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's potent.
So
They're trying not to pull a Wesley Crusher, basically, and put too much.
Yes, I think they're trying to be very careful with that, and that's a good thing. That is absolutely a good thing.
Yeah, I think they're doing a good job.
I do think, though, that she will probably be one of the characters that grows the most over the course of this series.
To the point where
you know, you'll want to hear more from Tilly and not less. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we follow two main stories in this episode, right? So we're following Lorca for one of the stories. Lorca gets abducted by the Klingons, and we follow that whole thing. And then we're also following Burnham and her story about Ripper. So why don't we sort of break down each of those and talk a bit about what we liked and what worked and what didn't.
All right.
So first off, we have Lorca, who gets abducted by the Klingons and helps introduce us to two new characters. Well, one new one and one old one.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn a lot about Lorca in the process. So, Brian, you started to mention that earlier.
Yeah, we learn quite a bit about Gabriel Lorca. We find out, well, for one thing, that he had a command not long before he got the Discovery, maybe 6 months prior, something like that, right? I forget exactly.
Yeah, it seemed very recent. Episode. Yeah,
very recent. Came under attack by Klingons, and somehow he was the only person that survived. And as it turned out, we find out why. He decides that instead of letting his crew fall into the hands of the Klingons, he, I assume, activated the self-destruct sequence on board his ship and killed everybody aboard. So, I would say that's a pretty hardcore, extreme thing to do.
And he still seems to think it was, you know, he doesn't seem to question that call.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Not at all. It's unwavering from him. It's also interesting because, of course, we don't really know how he is the only one to escape from it, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Why is that? Like, what just happened there? He makes no bones about it and, of course, just offers no explanations either. It's just like, yeah, I'm a survivor, whatever, right?
Yeah. Well, my people. It's almost like he shrugs it off like, yeah, I did it.
Yep. Yeah. To him, so, it's totally justified.
Yeah.
But
the ends justify the means, and that's what we're gonna. I think that clearly is setting us up for whatever we're gonna see from here on out from Gabriel Lorca. If he's that cold blooded about accomplishing his goal, that means everybody on the Discovery is expendable.
Yep.
Maybe they kind. I mean, they did try to tie it. I think they even had a line where they tied it to the choose your pain, the name of the episode, which of course is that the Klingons come into their cell and basically say who, which isn't. It's kind of strange because it's not really your pain, is it? It's like who do you want us to beat up?
Well, but if you actually have honor and integrity, you would choose yourself, not yourself.
Can you?
Yes, of course you can. And that's the whole point. Harry Mudd chooses somebody else every time because he's a wimp. You know what I mean? He's without integrity.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was interesting that, you know, Lorca, I believe he says something like, I'll give you choose your pain, you know, kind of a thing. I had to blow up. I chose my pain. I chose to blow them up. My ship. My crewmates. Mm-hmm. All these people that I was in charge of. I chose to blow them up. So to me, it, you know, there's a hint again. Yeah, I could be totally wrong, and it could be exactly what you were saying, Brian, and that it was a cold-blooded thing in pursuit of this goal of winning the war. But it seems like they're purposely keeping stuff from us so that we question what were his motives. Were they good? Were they bad? If we learn more about it, would we understand that he made this call
for a
reason?
That's a good point.
That very thing Mudd calls out, kind of, and you know, he says like, well, that he basically says that was really cold. Like, I can't believe he would do that. And Lorca even says, like, you don't even know what you're talking about. You know, there's a whole situation that I'm just not going to get into with you, you know? He sort of implies as much.
And to be fair, Lorca doesn't owe Mudd any kind of an explanation. Or
no,
Tyler.
Of course not.
Oh, no, of course not.
Especially given that he is this sort of elitist, almost military leader, right? So he's like this annoying, you know, clearly just like this sham artist, like civilian guy is here. Why do I even care to talk to him? You know, it's like, whatever. Mm. Especially when he figures out he's in cahoots with the Klingons feeding information. Like, he's going to do, you know, nothing to help him at that point.
Agreed. I wonder if Starfleet knows what happened, what truly happened.
Oh, on his previous command. Ship? Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, because to me, to leave someone like that, to hand someone like that the captaincy of another vessel after that, it would be crazy.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, they would definitely... It's interesting. It seems like that the only excuse that they have is that he gets it done, so they put him back in the center seat. But, like, if this were TOS even, certainly TNG, but even in TOS, this would be totally the time when they would be having quite the conversation with him. For example, think about Matt Decker kind of going off his rocker and taking control of the Enterprise, right? That's exactly what I picture, you know, sort of Lorca turning into, losing his crew or something, right? And so we don't really decorate Mr. Captain Decker, well, Commodore Decker for that. We go, no, you're kind of crazy. You need to get some objectivity and we need to relieve you of duty. Right. So it's interesting. I don't know. Like, maybe that's what happens, or maybe this is we're so desperate for people who just will, like, you know, shove things through until they get done that they're going to kind of overlook that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I just thought it was...
Well, the Admiral is certainly not particularly thrilled with him, you know? Like, she's kind of wary of him.
I thought she was wary of him, but maybe justifiably so. I thought he acted like kind of a total jerk to her. He totally pulled the, you're just jealous card on her.
He was pretty jerky.
What was she saying to him?
A few things were said, so now I've kind of don't remember exactly.
I don't remember exactly.
I mean, in any event, he replies... he doesn't say you're just jealous, but in so many words, but he basically says you're jealous of the power that I've been given.
Right.
Yeah, he did say something
along those lines. It's something about his euphemism is basically the latitude that Starfleet has given.
Yeah, you're not comfortable with the level of power that I've been given, basically.
Right.
It's like, dude, don't flatter yourself.
And she's like, remember, I'm still an admiral, so, you know,
Because she seemed like she was kind of reaching out. I think she even says, I'm your friend.
She's reaching out to him as a human.
She's reaching across to him. He's just like, oh, you're just jealous. It's like, all right, dude. I thought he was kind of a jerk to her.
He was, yeah. We're not necessarily supposed to like him a lot in that regard.
I still think, you know, from a storytelling perspective, obviously they can do whatever they want, but it seems like there's a huge opportunity to build up this character and show us just certain sides of him so that we sort of form our own opinion of him. And then... all of a sudden, shocker, actually, you know, you thought that he was so terrible and blew up all his crewmates because he's a coward, but actually, it was this really hard decision for him to make, and it was the right call, and, you know, you learn all these things about him. I'm not saying that'll happen. I'm just saying it seems like there's a very good opportunity for them to turn all this stuff around on us and say, you thought you knew Lorca. He's actually amazing.
Yeah, and the showrunners keep saying, like, look, things get revealed slowly, like, what you think... You know, seeds are laid for a reason, and we'll come back to them and we'll explore them. So, like, it's very much in that vein of, like, well, this is all we see of him at the moment, but what else is there?
But don't judge too quickly because you weren't there. You don't know the whole story, kind of a thing. So
we should talk about the, I think we talked about it a little bit, but the idea of choosing your pain is kind of interesting. I liked it that they basically just said, you know, here's how we're going to torture you, and it may not be you. Like, you get to just sort of go around the room until I guess your choices are exhausted, and eventually it's back to you. You know, it's almost like a little roulette of, like, who gets beaten up. I thought that was kind of interesting. Kind of like Russian roulette of who gets beat up, you know?
It totally, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I guess, what were they torturing these people for?
That was never quite made clear, was it?
Lorca, it was clear, but everyone else... you know, Mud, it was saying, I mean, of course you could have been lying, but he's saying I was abducted by the Klingons and I'm just in prison, basically. But it's like, okay, why are they torturing you? Because usually you do that to get information out of someone. And also it's, you know, you don't want to waste manpower. You don't want to tell your grunts to be torturing some useless guy. Like, just kill him.
Yeah.
Don't keep him alive.
Yeah.
Although, well, I guess the Mud was helping them, right?
He was, and also Mud seems to be pretty clued into stuff, considering that he knew about that very recent incident with Lorca's old ship. Like,
yes,
he knows some stuff. Yeah, he knows some stuff. So that's really, again, that may go back to why he's still around, just like why Tyler is still around. Like, they serve some purpose for Laurel, you know?
Could be.
Yeah. Can we talk about Harry Mudd for a second? I want to know what you guys thought of Harry and what you thought of Rainn Wilson's portrayal as Harry Mudd.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was really great. Of course, there's never going to be the ridiculous space pirate version, which I'm totally okay with. I thought he was like a good kind of mix of sort of amusing and sarcastic and kind of a, you know, a jerk, of course, and a little bit of a traitor, but all really good and all very like Rainn Wilson. Like, it's a very good like Rainn Wilson thing. And I'm like, yeah, this is good. This totally works. I enjoyed it a lot.
So did I. I thought he was perfect.
Yeah, it really worked for me.
Yeah. And I totally bought him as being a younger version of the more flamboyant guy we see 10 years later.
Sure, because, you know, let's face it, when you hit middle age, how many people do I know? I don't know about you guys. I know tons of people that hit middle age, and suddenly they go buy, like, Tommy Bahama shirts and just start hanging out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So maybe this is, you know, midlife crisis Mud decides to be piratey, you know.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Instead of a Corvette, he gets an Android.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, he's trying to escape his... It's like trying to escape your ex-wife. He's not his ex-wife, really, but he's trying to make it sort of his ex-wife, right? So he buys
buys
the new car, or in this case, like the Planet of Androids, you know? And
shout out to his wife, by the way.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, it was cool. Stella. They gave a little background to how he met Stella and what's going on with him and Stella.
Assuming that it's not total nonsense, because it is Harry.
Yeah, that was quite the story.
You never know.
Quite the story about
Biden. It's a great story, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Also, just brief shout out to Stuart, Harry Mudd's little arachnid friend.
That was interesting. I feel a little gimmicky, but overall was okay. Like, I don't, you know, hate it.
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, it was fine.
I will say two things about Stuart, and then we can move on. Because it's totally inconsequential to anything. A, I thought Stuart was super cute, and I really liked him. So, standout character in the show. Also, Lorca totally did not have to throw Stuart. That was just mean.
Yeah, he was just being mean. Because he'd like already found the bug.
It was actually pretty uncool and like not very Starfleet of him to harm another creature. But
Lorca's not upset your average captain.
Well, yeah, Lorca's not exactly a Starfleet kind of guy. So
Yeah. Too much animal abuse in the show so far.
There is. There's a lot of animal. Good thing that they're all CG so far. Huh?
No kidding. No Stuart or tardigrade wranglers on set.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to talk about, are we going to leave the Klingon ship or are we going to...
No, we better talk about that extra person who happened to be kind of hiding in the background there that Lorca didn't know was in the cell, which is Ash Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
He was interesting because he was behind that kind of series of pipes looking, you know, kind of thing, divider. And it's interesting because, you know, I think the whole audience, like Lorca, was pretty sure no one else was in the room but the two of them. Like, you definitely get this feeling that there's only the two of them in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly he's kind of pacing back and forth and like pops his head around the back side of that. And there's, you know, there's Lieutenant Tyler just in a heap kind of hanging out there. And it's like, wait, really? Where did you just come from? So interesting.
Also, I wasn't totally clear on this, but it really seemed like it was implied that Lieutenant Tyler was raped.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly imply that that's why he was kept around. Yeah.
Yeah, by Laurel.
Yeah, yeah, that right. He was kind of a pretty boy toy for, like, Laurel. Yeah.
Yeah. And it would explain why he, like, almost goes batshit crazy on her later and he starts basically...
Oh, he pummels her. Yeah, he's... Yeah.
Repeatedly, yeah. You know, so...
It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than that, you know, he's an interesting character. As we mentioned last week, there is a conspicuous opening for a crew member aboard the Discovery after Landry exited stage left.
Mm-hmm.
This is true.
So he could fill that role conveniently.
Conveniently, yes.
We just happen to have an opening.
Yeah. Right. And he happens to have a background in like sort of military tactics and like security.
Hmm. Yeah, an appropriate
rank.
What a
coinkydink.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. You know, whatever. Yay, plot device. It's all good. On the one of the last sort of things I think we should talk about in the Klingon ship was we had yet to see the Klingon disruptors, the new Klingon disruptors in action. And they were
rather powerful.
Yes, very interesting. Yeah, powerful. More powerful than what we would normally see, I would think. I think, for Klingon disruptors. But also very uniquely, like, effects very unique. Like, it's almost more of a, I don't know what you want to call it, almost kind of like a glowing ball of plasma almost shot out of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
almost a burning thing.
I thought it was a very cool look. That looked great on screen.
It's cool. And boy, does that, like, in, like, so of course, like, disruptors are supposed to be, like, near instant disintegration. We know that. But dang, these really do very quickly disintegrate people.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that the one that doesn't quite hit Laurel completely, it was kind of interesting because it doesn't, like, you know, disintegrate half her face. Instead, it basically, like, acid burns, like, half her
face. Yeah, it starts melting her face,
right.
Basically.
Which goes back to that thing where it kind of feels like a ball of plasma. Instead of like a disruptor beam, you know, kind of deal. It's very interesting.
It was cool.
It is. Oh, and one other thing I thought was kind of goofy when they basically do the jailbreak sequence. You know, Klingons are supposed to be these like badass people that can kick the crap out of, you know, most species in the universe.
Yeah.
Why is it that humans can always take them out?
Also,
that is a Trek trope from
weakened humans.
I was about to say, one of which had been imprisoned for 7 months and starved near death.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
We think anyway.
And we bolted it and he had just gotten the crap kicked out of him
too.
It
was way
too
convenient how easy it was for them to overtake the Klingon guards.
But you know that happens in like every freaking show. That's the thing.
Or maybe that's intentional.
Yeah, right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes,
so
either
we're nitpicking a thing that we should just overlook, or there's a reason for that, and there's some clandestine stuff going on.
Yeah,
here.
Considering that Mr. Tyler there somehow made it like 7 months. So we don't know why exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so it could very well be a setup, but yeah, as I was watching, I'm like, oh man, they are taking these guys out way too easy.
I know. So they have these whole like armored, you know, torsos, and then they're doing like the gut punch to him, and I'm like, that they
I'm
barely
like,
feel
yeah,
that.
No. Yeah.
No, that yeah. way. Yeah.
I had the same. I was like, I think I even said something out loud, like, oh come on, it was just way too easy. But we had to move the plot along. So.
Yeah, and that happens. Like, indeed. I said, that happens in like almost every Trek.
Oh yeah.
Somehow people can totally beat up Klingons, and it's like, really? Okay, whatever. If it's not the Klingons, it's like the Jem'Hadar, you know? It's like, how come we can, like, rush a Jem'Hadar and suddenly beat them up when they're a super soldier? But it happens, like, every, you know, plot, when it's needed in the plot.
So we should transport ourselves off of the Klingon ship and back onto the Discovery, because there's a lot going on Discovery.
Yes.
There certainly is.
And this was the whole story following Burnham, as we usually do. And I think it was Burnham and Ripper that walked us through this story, or at least Ripper was the thing at the center of all of the action that was going on around him. They finally, I say finally, because we had to wait a week for it to happen, which is just, I guess, unusual for Trek. But they finally addressed this ethical issue that they had set up the last episode, which was, it felt good that they addressed it. I had this, like, on the edge of my seat feeling at the end of the last episode, like, are anyone going to talk about the elephant in the room here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As we talked about last week, I was kind of like miffed that nobody had addressed it yet, you know? So very pleased to see the right questions being asked this week after the fact, mind you.
Yeah.
Kind
definitely.
Of worrying, you know, the damage had already been done, but nonetheless.
And they just kept doing it to him.
Yeah.
That was hard to watch. I thought they might kill him.
Yeah, that last one.
Well,
they
darn near
him in,
dead.
That was hard to watch. That last one that they did to him when he ended up curling up in a ball afterwards, that was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was.
Because you could tell the creature was like suffering.
Screaming.
It was so obvious.
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, you know, they end up making good at the end with, well, as good as you can make with the situation, but like, you have to think that creature, especially if that creature ends up being sentient, it's going to go back to its people and be like, you got to stay away from these humans.
Yeah.
Like, they're like just horrible people.
Yeah.
Horrible light beings.
He was tortured.
And, like, you know,
yeah.
He was tortured and like, it was like there was no way to communicate with him or anything. And I don't know. Starfleet does not come out looking good in this scenario.
No.
Let me put it that way.
If only there were a Vulcan who could do a mind meld. You know what I mean? That would be the TOS way.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Should have gotten Sarek on speed dial.
I was going to say, if he can beam into Michael's head from across the galaxy, then surely he could help out with it.
Yeah.
She could channel him through. Yeah.
I would like to shout out to that scene, though, where he does that horrible scene. It's so hard to watch, where he curls up into a ball and sheds his water, because that's a thing that they really do. So tardigrades in real life, you know, they're actually this microscopic creature, which they've talked about. And one of the ways that they survive for such long periods, either in droughts, so in deserts or even in the vacuum of space, is by doing exactly that. And so they basically slow their life functions down to a crawl so that they need hardly any energy to sustain their life force. And then when a nice rain comes along or a moist pressurized area instead of the vacuum of space, they can like reinflate themselves and just carry on about their day. So that was cool that they used a lot of real science in this.
Yeah, there was a really cool way they did it. I like that a lot.
So what about, we watch several characters throughout this. Burnham is obviously the main character carrying us through that. But we also get to see a little bit more of Stamets. We get a good introduction to our doctor. And we get a lot of stuff going on between Burnham and Saru as well.
Yeah, that was some meaty stuff between the two of them. Stuff that needed to come out, basically. Stuff that needed to be hashed out, you know.
Yeah, I finally feel like maybe they're patching things up. I think Saru still acted like a bit of a jerk. And I've been saying this every episode, and it seems like everyone else disagrees. They're like, oh, I understand why he's acting this way, blah, blah, blah. And I guess I do too. But I almost feel defensive of Michael Burnham whenever they interact and he's kind of acts like a jerk to her. I was thinking about it today, how to put this into words, and I realized it's almost like, you know, when your friend calls you up and they say, oh, my boyfriend's being such a jerk, he's you know, he's doing this or that. Usually, you know, in that situation, you don't say to them, oh, well, maybe we should hear things from the side of your boyfriend. You just say, yeah, he's a jerk.
Because that's not what they're looking for. They're looking for, you know, someone to just side with them.
And just be their buddy, yeah.
Yeah.
And so take their side. And so I'm kind of just taking Michael's side and everything. I'm like, hey, Saru, look here, okay? She's been through a lot. You know? I kind of feel like I want to step in and, like, be Michael's friend.
It's true. There's that aspect to it, for sure. I will say, though, that I think it's nice to see Saru actually step back and try and, although as kind of awkward and faulty this idea was, to step back and sort of, like, try and, like, judge himself. You know, where he tries to call up the database and, like, figure out what sort of common traits a good captain has. It's kind of neat, a little awkward, and kind of, like, not really, like, going to be helpful. Because you can't really ask a computer, like, what makes a good leader. You know, that doesn't really, as we know time and time again, say from TOS, you can't really replace a captain with a computer.
That's right.
That's right. Captain Dunsel. You can't do it. So it was a nice thought, though. Like, it's a nice scene that Saru is going, really reflecting on himself and going, well, wait, this is my first time really, truly taking the center chair. Do I have what it takes? And what is it exactly that it takes, you know? It was nice. But at the same time, a little silly, because the computer's not going to tell you anything you don't already know. These abstract ideas, you know, you need to be this, that, and the other.
And ultimately, he doesn't even bother finding out at the end how he measured against the other captains anyway.
No, and it's probably for the best, because I don't know what you would get. Like, what would you get from the computer for that? Like,
Right.
You know, I don't know what any of us would get. You know what I mean? It's like, wow.
Yeah. I thought the exercise was kind of silly myself.
It was. It was totally just an excuse for him to reflect on himself and then for them to drop some sweet, sweet fan service, which we can talk about later. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, I thought Saru, you know, he was clearly scared. He was put into a rough situation.
Mm-hmm.
It clearly was not ready for.
I will say it was really nice to see him not be... He actually hasn't really been one-dimensional since the beginning, but it doesn't help that the way they introduced him, like just pre-show everything, was that he was this binary thinker of a prey species that doesn't really lend you to think that he could have command ability, right? So it's nice to see that he does. He definitely has a different point of view on it, but he totally does. Like, he really did okay. It's maybe not like how you or I maybe would have made choices, but they weren't bad choices per se.
And they were just different.
Right. They were just different choices, but, and they were executed well. Right.
Yeah. Whether or not the choices were good or bad or incorrect or correct, he carried them out well, and he carried them out with leadership. And he said basically, this is my decision and this is what we're doing. And then his crew
and
followed him.
Like I took him seriously. You know what I mean? Like if I were one of his crew, I'd be like, okay, you're the acting captain, you know?
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Even if I didn't like it, because it's not my job to like my captain's orders.
Right. So that was really nice to see Saru sort of stretch himself in that direction.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out the relationship between him and Burnham, though.
Well, and they are too, honestly. They have to refigure out their relationship at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond the obvious sort of brother-sister thing.
Yeah, right, beyond the obvious. Because they're still not sure how they feel about each other, given that he feels betrayed by her. And vice versa, honestly. She feels he's not sticking up for her, right?
That's how I feel, too. Come on.
I don't agree with that at all.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
I think that she's the one who has to do all the rehab here, not him.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, yeah, she has to certainly do most of it. But I feel like that's the whole, like, if I come 90, you need to come 10 kind of thing.
You know, okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. But yeah.
That is reasonable. But the problem with that in this particular situation is that every time he trusts her or asks her to do something, she ignores it.
That is a valid point.
Yeah. Because
that's twice now she's done that.
I mean, you know, she kind of manipulated him in the last episode to see if his threat ganglia would come up, and then didn't really. Seemed to care all that much that he was upset. And then in this particular instance, he tells her not to go to engineering, and then he finds her there anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, she
very
went
true.
Over his like, head, yeah.
So she's not him. Really being a good friend either. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, if I were Saru, I'd be like, what is with this person?
That is very true, especially when we're talking about him being acting captain and trying to have a clear chain of command on his first, like, real acting captain
gig. Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
True.
So he does the right thing. He confines her to quarters.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely like the right thing to do from his perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then I kind of found the end a little strange in that he admits to being jealous of her because she had all that time with Captain Giorgio and he didn't.
Like, really? Well, that goes back to
your reason for being unhappy?
Well, I don't know if that's the sole reason, but that goes back to the sibling side of it.
Well,
like, here's the
it could be. Yeah, good point.
But it's more than that, too. It's also this idea that he has in his head that Burnham's actions and the death of Giorgio, she stole his future from him. He had his future planned out. He was going to be first officer to Giorgio, his favorite person. She, in his mind, he's decided that she was directly responsible for her death, and she was directly responsible for him not having that entire future that he had planned out for himself.
Very true. He does say that. Yeah. And as a person who would like safety, right? Because that's one of the things he values most.
Mm-hmm.
That's very. She totally took away this very safe plan of his.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
how about Stamets? We get to see a little bit more of him. I feel like I'm very slowly growing on the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like him okay. Again, he's just got the curmudgeonly scientist thing down. And I don't really, some people really don't like it. And I have no problem with it. I think that's, I don't know about you, but I've totally met not just scientists, but I've met a lot of people like that who are very smart and are just, that's who they are. That's their personality.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really bother me.
As a scientist, I've definitely met plenty of scientists that act that way. What bothers me about it is that's not a good way to have a career because science is very collaborative and, you know, you require things like peer review. You require things like other people's resources and, you know, review people in the community who are going to be reviewing your grants. The people who you mentor are going to go on to have jobs that are going to end up having an effect on, you know, your job and your career. So it's just, you know, whenever you see people like that, you just wait for them to get their shit handed right back to them. You know, just there's no reason to go around being a jerk to everyone. There's just not. It doesn't matter how smart you are. And when it comes to science anyway, you know, you can't have an ego in science because the data are the data and they don't lie. So you can think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, but in the end, you know, it's you're discovering something about the universe. You're not creating something from nothing. You know, you're using the tools at your disposal developed by someone else, you know, to find out some new truths about the universe. And that should be humbling. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't make you be egotistical. So anyway.
Well, if only they all thought like that, Caleb, because that's a really great way to think about it.
That's just me being a scientist and, you know, seeing like there really are people like Stamets out there, and they're, they have, you know, some people say, well, they have every right to be a jerk. They're a genius. And it's like, well, being smart doesn't give you the right to be
mean. That's like saying that, you know, the artist's temperament is allowed too. Oh, they're artists. They're artistic. You know what I mean? They're,
right.
They're allowed to be very bipolar and back and forth and flit about and, you know.
Yeah. Whatever. It's maybe an explanation, but not an excuse.
Right.
Good point.
Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent, but.
But overall, though, I do think Stamets is fairly sort of amusingly likable, sort of in that amusing, like, well, there he goes again. He's being kind of an a-hole, but it's like fun,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to grow into that for me. And I don't dislike him. I actually like the Stamets character quite a bit.
I think it helps that Anthony Rapp is just kind of like a really nice guy. And he just, you know what I mean? Like in real life, he's a super nice dude and like.
Yeah.
And he's actually really like, he looks like he should be a nice guy. Like he's putting on a sour face, but you're just like, oh, but you should be this nice guy, right?
But actually you're a teddy bear inside, actually.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
So, you know,
totally.
There's that little piece of it all.
He has the teddy bear inside vibe for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm happy.
I assume behind closed doors, he's a little bit more of that way. We'll find out, I think, soon, but that'd be nice to see.
Well, this might be a good segue, speaking of Stamets being behind closed doors, to shout out to Star Trek's first non-heterosexual couple on television in this episode.
Finally.
Yay.
Finally.
Long overdue.
Yeah, way overdue.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I liked about it? They didn't make a big deal about it.
Yeah. They're just a couple brushing their teeth, man.
Just a couple brushing their teeth, getting ready to go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. That,
I mean, you know.
No big deal.
Because it shouldn't be a big deal.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and they're interracial couple to boot. So.
Yep.
And again, that's the thing that like has no real bearing at this to humans at that point. You know.
Right.
It's like
right.
Yeah, okay, whatever. We have diversity.
Yeah, that, like, again, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it should be.
Nothing to it. Yeah. No big deal.
And they're a cute couple to boot. They're a good TV like cute couple.
Yeah, totally.
Can I say though how goofy it is that they're. That they, A, have Star Trek issued pajamas, and B, that their Star Trek issued pajamas have what look like metal insignia on them?
Yeah, the metal
they
part
did
is
have metal.
Silly.
I noticed they were metal.
What if like, you roll over, kinda, man?
Right?
I was about to say, you could stab yourself in bed with
those
things.
Those things are pointy.
Yeah. It should have been embroidered or something.
They
it should
have,
not have been real metal.
Everything doesn't have to have the Delta on it. I always joke that, you know, because we used to talk about before the show started, when we were starting to see all the props and everything, there were Deltas on everything. And our joke.
Saru's boots have
everything.
Deltas.
The boots, the rifle, I think, has multiple deltas on it.
Yeah.
It's a Starfleet has become very brand aware.
Apparently.
They sure have.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
Yeah. Hey, did you know this is a Starfleet ship? Did you? You know? It's like, yeah.
Did you know this is Star Trek?
Yeah.
Blue milk.
Blue milk, exactly. But
hey, if you like this phaser rifle with this custom insignia on it, this will be available soon from CBS.
Yeah,
exactly.
Merchandising.
Exactly.
Where the real money from the picture is made.
Totally. Spaceball's the flamethrower, you guys. Come on.
Star Trek the phaser rifle. Star Trek the pajamas.
Yep. Oh, man. You know those PJs are coming. That's going to happen.
Those PJs will totally... Absolutely, they will come.
Oh yeah, so somebody like thinking
that's easy. Those are easy. That's actually an easy thing to do.
If you put it on screen, they will come. Yeah. They're probably already on Etsy somewhere.
Could be.
Yeah,
wouldn't take long.
No, because you just find have to write maroon PJs and then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So another little moment that happened. Just thinking about the things that happened with Stamets. Is the scene where we had Tilly and Stamets and Michael Burnham all working together.
Yep.
Which was a cool scene and also included another first for Star Trek on television, huh, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek's first F-bomb, two in a row.
Yeah, baby. I think they could have done without it personally, but at the same time, I didn't hate it either. I think it was kind of cute because, you know, it's Tilly just being like, wow, this is really cool, you know? and it just slips out, and she's like, oops, you know, I just said the F-bomb for my boss.
So it was fine, but it almost did call attention to itself.
Yeah,
it
because like... exactly, because they don't drop F-bombs in Trek ever. So it was like, oh.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like they did it because they could do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is fine, I guess.
Hey, did you know this is a streaming show? Did you?
Did you know it's TVMA?
Yeah,
did you? That's kind of what language? Right, that's kind of what it felt like, though. You know what I mean?
A little bit.
But it didn't faze me one way or the other. No, it was just kind of, you know.
Yeah, it was
drew attention to itself.
That's what I was. Why I was watching this with my husband Andy, and he said the same thing. Pretty much, he's like, they didn't really need it. I kind of liked it. I'm definitely leaning more on the side of liked it, because you know, as far as the TVMA thing goes, if we're worried about kids, I think if they've watched past episode 3, they're probably already scarred. Because I do have to say, like, for little kids,
the pretzel people.
Oh, God.
You know, an episode. Oh, my goodness.
Best name for them ever.
I do have to say about this, though. I mean, I don't mind as an adult watching a TVMA version of Star Trek. Doesn't bother me at all. But I got into Trek when I was so little.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was 6 years old when I started watching Star Trek.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I kind of feel bad that, like, this show is not really meant for anybody near that age.
Yeah, it's not. I do too,
but I think it's honestly, I think it's the violence that does it. I don't think it's the word fuck said twice in one episode.
I agree.
Six-year-olds know what that word is, and they've said it before, and, you know, whatever, big deal. It's just a word.
I didn't at six. It probably took till 8 for that, for the F one.
Yeah.
I knew the S word and some other stuff, but I don't know about that one.
Plus, I feel like words, too, have less and less... You know, it's less of a big deal as time goes on. Like, I think kids today are exposed to a lot more language stuff as they were when we were kids.
They drop that stuff really early now. Kids start swearing really early.
The violence is a bit different, though. Because episode 3, like, I have some friends who don't really like scary movies, and I was actually telling them, I was thinking, oh, wow, you don't like scary movies, huh? You might actually not like episode 3. Because it was pretty creepy.
Yeah, especially with the mangled body.
Yeah,
it was very, like, the Thing or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it totally had that vibe. Carpenter. It totally had that vibe. Yeah.
So, you know, but it's just, you know, for people who are complaining about the TVMA rating because of the F-bombs in this episode.
Yeah,
that's fine. If that's how you want to, you know, raise your kids, I'm not going to question that at all, obviously. I'm not a parent.
No, hell no.
And even if I were, I'm not here to tell you what to do. But it's, you know, it's like, okay, guys, this isn't the worst thing.
The creepy stuff and the gore totally outweighs that, I think.
Yeah.
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 Anyway.
So anyway. But the F-bomb's kind of cute. I could take it or leave it, but...
How about our new dear doctor?
Yeah. I haven't seen quite enough of him yet to really get a good vibe, but I liked what I saw.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it was fine what I saw, but yeah, it's hard to get a read on him yet.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I agree, too. I will wait to see more of him. But I thought... I'm not sure if it was the acting or if that's just how his character is. Something about him didn't sit well with me. I thought it was a little bit awkward, to be honest.
He definitely felt like he was having a hard time spitting out some of that Trek dialogue.
Yeah, so maybe he'll get better.
Yeah, he may just need time to learn his technobabble.
It happens. A lot of people trip up on the technobabble early on. So.
Yeah, so we'll see.
And I like the actor.
Yeah, Wilson Cruz is cool.
Wilson Cruz is a super amazingly nice, sweet guy. And the amount of passion he has for the LGBT issues that they're trying to address, I think, are just...
When he speaks about it, it's really inspiring to hear him speak about it.
Yeah, he's very clearly passionate about it, and that means a lot.
So yeah, we'll see. But he definitely served like a good you know, role here, which is like... hey, like, two people that I, you know, one that I'm really close to and one that is this intriguing new person who seems to be, you know, pointing out a really unethical thing. Like, I'm going to take her word for it and I'm going to go, you know, scan this life form and investigate it with her. And that's really cool because, you know, tons of the crew could, and I'm sure a lot of the crew does, as we've seen, would just be like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, yeah, whatever, mutineer who doesn't have a rank. Like, why are you, bringing this up?
Yeah, he was more respectful than Saru. I'm still playing. I'm still playing Burnham's like girlfriend, who she's calling up and be like, "Oh my god, Gayla, you will not believe what Saru just did to me today. She totally blanked me in the hallway."
Well, so and it goes back to the way that they've described him as a character, which is that he's got this, you know, big heart for, you know, people and people of all kinds, including tardigrades, and taking care of them and making sure that they're, you know, healed and well. And so if that's really like why he's a doctor, well, then of course this appeals to him, because somebody's saying, look, this creature is being exploited and damaged. You're a doctor. Come help me analyze this, you know, this poor thing's body. What's wrong with it? Kind of feel. So.
Do you think he's going to say, I'm a doctor, not a blank at some point?
Oh god, I hope not.
I hope not too. They really shouldn't do it.
Yeah,
that would be one
much.
Of those fan service things they shouldn't do. Yeah,
that would be a terrible fan service thing. That is strictly the province of Leonard McCoy.
Yeah,
definitely.
So speaking of the doctor taking care of people, he's definitely trying to take care of Stamets, who is the hero of the episode. I think definitely for me, he
sort of the reluctant hero, you might say.
Well, yeah. I don't know how reluctant he was.
I think it came down to it. Well, sure, but I think he was sort of forced into it. And he said, okay, well, then this is the only choice. I will sacrifice myself.
Yeah, but I they didn't show the events happening, but I imagined it as him saying, this is the situation I'm presented with, and not, you know, the reluctant part maybe wasn't in his decision to sort of sacrifice himself instead of the creature. I imagine that seemed like that was his plan all along when he said, you know, yes, Captain, I'll do it.
Oh yeah, sure. Sorry. Yes. At the end, that's very clearly because he's like, look, I'm not going to risk anyone else but myself. This is my work, you know, my stuff. And then he, you know, put himself in harm's way. But I was thinking until then he was sort of dragging, you know, he was like, well, what, you know, who else could do this? What else, you know, what other species could this be compatible with?
Sure.
And it's like, yeah, it's you, you know, it's us humans. That's it. So, which kind of like made it obvious that he was probably going to go sacrifice, you know, himself.
He saved, he saved Ripper. What a guy.
Yeah.
Although there's probably although I have to say it was very, very altruistic. There's probably a thread of selfish, you know, I kind of want to see what happens.
Yes, because totally. Remember in the last one he talks about how he's always wanted to converse with his mushrooms.
Yeah.
And he was kind of jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says something to that effect this time after the fact, doesn't he? He says it, I think, to the doctor.
I don't know, but he certainly kind of laughs like kind of happily and like knowingly that he actually got to experience something.
Yeah, that laugh was like totally like a holy shit, it worked laugh.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, look what I just got to do. Look what I just experienced. Yeah. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought I
found the workaround.
I thought that when they were in brushing their teeth with their sonic toothbrushes, that he, you know, says something like, oh, yeah, no, I'm fine. It was actually pretty cool because I got to see these amazing things, and I saw the whole network, and you know, it's sort of opened my eyes. I got to see the whole universe in front of me, you know, something like that. So this is like this really profound, almost religious experience for him to have taken, you know, to have taken part in that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And then ominous music.
Mm-hmm.
With the
yeah.
Oh, I'm fine, honey. Go to bed. Yeah. Stares in the mirror. Bum, 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 bum. What do we think of that?
Yeah,
pretty creepy, especially because he walks out of the room and then he's still there in the mirror for a second. Like, what's that about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Staring creepily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, but with a little smile on his face too, which actually is pretty creepy.
Overlaid with ominous music, so that the musical cues were definitely directing us to feel dread.
Yes. So I think there's a couple different ways we can look at this. One is, before we get to the sort of big one, one is that I almost felt like it might be too obvious that this is a mirror universe lead-in. So
yeah.
Before we go to the mirror universe part. The other part of this is just simply that he is starting to unravel various probabilities of himself, because they talked about how this works, that the longer, you know, the farther you jump, the more complex it is, and it becomes highly probabilistic, and you need something Robot Murder. That's what Ripper does, is basically like fold the probability sort of back on itself and keep it together to figure out where you really need to be and not just go nowhere and kind of implode into like a multiverse or something. It's sort of the implication. So if I'm kind of hoping they're not doing the mirror universe thing yet, because we don't really know these characters well enough to know what the inverse of them would be, right? I liken the thing I started to make me think about was, remember how when they did the Naked Now in like the third episode of TNG?
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, but we don't know how these people really behave, not, you know, space drunk. So this is really kind of awkward. I feel like it could be, they have to be careful, because what does Mirror Lorca look like? Is he even more of a bastard, or is he like a pacifist, right? Like, how does that work? I don't know, because we don't really know if Lorca is a bastard in our universe, or he just sort of seems that way, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping it's not that. We can come back to the mirror thing. What I am just sort of hoping is that we just, this weird lingering, you know, reflection of himself is like, yeah, you just made cracks like in the various sort of probable, you know, universes, right? Because it's the whole, every outcome did actually happen somewhere in some alternate universe, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of hoping it's just some dramatic license for saying like, oh, and by the way, you just sort of cracked open your own, since he's the focal point, right? Because he's the one that put himself in the in the chamber. So he like just sort of cracked open his own multiverse and didn't mean to, obviously. That's a side effect of doing this. I don't know. The mirror thing is pretty on the nose. So I'm thinking, because they used a mirror, that, yeah, we're about to get a mirror episode. But I don't know.
I like your theory better, Matt.
I like mine better, too. And I really hope that's where they're going. Because I would like to think that that mirror thing is just a hint that in the future, the side effect maybe we unlock the mirror universe. But not yet. We're just kind of teasing you.
Sure, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because we do know we're going.
Because we know that's going to happen. Right, we do know that's going to happen.
I feel like you're, in any event, it's mirror universe related, right? Even based on your theory,
sure.
Because it seems
some kind of alternate reality.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand, saying, you know, that it's the multiverse theory, where any action results, there are infinite possibilities for every action that occurs, and all those things exist in various universes. And I think it's safe to say that in Star Trek lore, in the Star Trek universe, that the mirror universe that we've come to know it as is only one of infinite number of alternate universes.
Oh, definitely so.
It's just one specific one that we've revisited several times.
A very famous one, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
The other thing, too, that I was thinking as we were thinking about this yesterday after watching the episode was, if we thought, for example, that the next episode was going to be the mirror universe episode, I might say that Stamets, as we saw him looking into the mirror, is his mirror self.
And that's a good point.
And that when he went into the chamber, that's what initiated the switch. And so our Stamets is in the mirror universe, and that's mirror Stamets here, who's like, oh, I'm fine. Dun, 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 dun.
Very good point. Yeah. That is totally, that could totally do it. And that would be a good way to keep it still not in the mirror universe yet. But because unknowing to everyone else, he's flip-flopped, right? He's swapped.
Right.
But we don't know yet, and it may take a few episodes, right?
True,
Like, is found, and then we get into the whole truly visiting the mirror universe.
And then if that's the case, then in the mirror universe episode, our Stamets is the one that carries us through that story. Or maybe someone also goes to try to save him, and there's two of them in there or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we've got to get our Stamets back and switch them, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could totally work. Nice job, Kayla. I didn't even think of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's awesome. Again, I really hope they use one or both of our kind of clever ideas, and it's not just so literal that, like, hey, guess what? Coming up next is a mirror universe episode, you know? Like, I don't know. I don't think they're going to do that somehow. I don't think so, more clever than that, but we'll see.
Speaking of fan service...
Mm.
Why don't we talk about, we alluded to some of the stuff that happened fan service wise earlier in the podcast. Why don't we talk about it a bit, and it, sort of in the context of, what do you guys think in terms of, did it work in this episode? So we had the Klingon map,
mm-hmm.
where we saw Rurapente and some other
K7.
Yeah, Space Station K7.
Oh, I didn't even notice Space Station K7.
Oh, it's there, baby.
Ah, right, that's there, awesome. Because
right near Rurapente. Because it's like to the north, northeast.
I never realized it was close to Rurapente.
On that map.
Yeah, well, because because Roth, Rurapente, and Deep Space at K7 are basically like not that far into their respective territories. Mm-hmm. So
makes sense. You know, because we see Klingons at K7 in TOS.
And it doesn't seem to be all that hard to rescue people from Rurapente, actually.
Right.
Because it happens twice. Because they do it in Enterprise and then they do it in Star Trek VI. So they're not super deep into Klingon territory, I guess, is the point. It's cool. K7 is on there. Rurapente is on there. The Mempa system, which is a well-known system where a bunch of politics kind of go down during the Klingon Civil War in Next Generation. And... Yeah. All kinds of other stuff. Just it's cool. They dropped a lot of good stuff in there.
It totally worked for me because it's canon. Though we know those places exist. They were in the right place. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that they would be looking at a map of that area. It all made sense to me.
Yep. Oh, that's absolutely. Right. And Kittimer is just barely visible. That's another cool shout out.
Oh, that's right. Kittimer's there too. Right?
Yeah, but at the top of the Klingon space that's shown. So it's cool.
Yeah, no, it totally works. It's totally in context. It doesn't feel gratuitous at all. No,
it's perfect. Exactly. It's exactly how it should be, which is it's a chart in the background. And, you know, they reference it. And that's great.
Yep.
And then another fan service-y moment was when Saru, as you were talking about, Matt, Saru calls up the list of most decorated captains to compare himself against.
Yep. Now, this one is I liked it fine. I think it was a great list. But as we talked about, it's a little more on the nose kind of fan service, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
There was not even one name that we didn't know, right?
Yeah. Our colleague pointed out that maybe it would have been cool to see, for example, Shran on the list, because he was a very notable person who eventually joined, you know, when the Federation formed, he was a notable Andorian captain. And it's like, yeah, well, if Archer is on there, where are the other species that have joined Starfleet and the Federation since then?
Also, right? It's like old white guy, Captain Georgiou.
Yep, exactly. That's kind of not cool. Actually, good point. That's not cool at all. Like, for example, could they have, I mean, there are other people we could have thrown in.
Or make someone up.
Right. Like,
But then we're all sitting there going, oh, who's that?
Well, so for example, decorate both Archer and his equivalent of the NX-02, like his other captain of the NX-02. Maybe she did really illustrious things. Captain Hernandez, right? Why isn't she there? Or whatever. I mean, there's another person that we could
female
put on the
minority,
list.
Two birds, one stone.
That is right, exactly. That is not just a dude.
She could be the token.
Token. I guess that makes Georgiou the token, doesn't it?
Kinda, except we know her, so.
Except we know her, yeah.
But yeah, so who was it on the list, right? It was Captain April.
So that's something worth talking about, too, because April was only, before now, has only been sort of quasi-canon. Because April, as most folks know about the development of TOS, April was just originally was just another name thrown out there for the captain of the Enterprise. And, you know, other names like Winter and April and Pike.
Flag.
All these names were thrown around. And, of course, they landed on Pike originally. And then when they recast, they went to another choice, which was Kirk. So the idea of April has never been exactly solidly canon. But, of course, this depends on how you... If we want to get all nitpicky, right? This depends on how you what you consider TAS. What you consider the animated series. Because... One of the things that they did was, the very last episode of the animated series, Captain April and his wife are there kind of visiting the Enterprise and talking about how they were some of the first. This is where it gets really like does not fit canon whatsoever, is because they start kind of talking with the crew and saying that they were some of the first on some of the first warp capable ships ever and things like that. And it's like, that's very iffy and canon. But in theory, he was also one of the. He was the very first captain of the Enterprise before it was handed to Pike, before it was handed to Kirk.
I mean, I remember him saying in the episode that he was actually in, like, the San Francisco Yards when, mm-hmm. like, the the Enterprise's base components were being built. Like, he was like that. Right. He was there from the very beginning.
Right. So we have never really officially, since, you know, TAS is sort of canonical, but pieces are kind of not, right? So this is the first time something that's officially like, yep, this is a canonical TV series, has actually said Robert April exists. So that's right. That's kind of the big deal, the big fan servicey deal out of that list.
Canon, get some.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Put that great. On a t-shirt.
We'd sell it for sure.
So so who else was there? Pike. Captain Pike was there. Captain Archer.
Yeah.
Matt Decker.
Oh, yes. That's right. Another great shout out.
Which was a surprise. That was a surprise.
That was a good one.
About you. I thought of you, Brian.
Why is that?
Just because, you know, you love that movie.
Oh,
well, no. Matt Decker is from... Yeah, it's
Matt Decker's from the Doomsday Machine.
From the Doomsday Machine. That's Commodore Decker from the Doomsday Machine.
Yeah, that's who that is.
So he's decorated now, because this is 10 years prior to TOS, so he's a decorated captain now, and is probably given a promotion. Right,
Promotion to Commodore.
To Commodore, right. Yeah. Right. So yeah, no, that was really cool. I was very happy to see that. And like you, I was surprised, because I was like, cool, there's Matt Decker. I'm glad they did that.
Yeah, that was a nice touch.
Because it's a less than obvious one.
Caught me off guard. Yeah, it was good.
Because it's not. Because otherwise, they just went down the list of like, hey, what captains have we seen, you know, prior to this show? Oh, well, right. Archer, Pike. You know, it's like, all right.
They probably needed another one from the series. Like, all right, who else do we have? You know, and they can't use like Ron Tracy.
No,
like who? The Omega Glory, and like
That's right.
More corrupt starship captains. Yeah, you can't really use them. Yeah.
Well, that and Kayla, you just answered the question because you just went, who? Because, like, that's right. He has no name recognition, right? Like, who is that? You wouldn't know by
right.
name. By
the Doomsday Machine is a famous episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, anyway, so that was really awesome. That was a very nice little piece of fan service that did not feel...
Yes, it was.
That part, that name specifically did not feel gratuitous, because it's totally plausible that at this point he's a decorated captain and about to be a Commodore at some point. So.
Right.
All right, so I think we've talked about the majority of things in the episode, but I know there's some things on everyone's list that, you know, we didn't get a chance to go into in any great detail. Little random bits that we might just want to mention real quick. So what do you guys think? Do you have any little random things you wanted to shout out to before we end the episode?
One tiny kind of nitpick that we can just sort of talk about real quick and move on from is when Lorca was kidnapped. Oh, well, first off, real quick. So why is a really important captain, like, not escorted by anyone, right? It's just, like, him and a shuttle pilot. That's kind of...
Yeah, I know.
But more to the point, though, it's interesting that when he's kidnapped and the computer scans the ship and clearly says it's a D7 class, like, Klingon ship, right? Well, it looks nothing like it. I know we don't get a really good look at it, but none of the lines are right. And okay, so this is not one of those things to belabor the point. It's really simple. They just don't call it a D7. Like, it's as simple as that. They would have no conflict with people who are, you know, want to nitpick ships, who are into ships, things like that. Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who love their starships, right? They just don't call it that. Just simply have the computer identified as like a Klingon cruiser, right? Generically or something. Would be perfectly fine. The fact that they called it as a D7 is just, they shouldn't have done it. Everything would be fine if they didn't. But that's all, you know. It's like, just don't.
Yeah, and it still begs the question of, like, why are all these things looking so radically different?
Yeah, if it had just been a different class of ship, everything would have been good.
Yeah. And before we get off of the whole shuttlecraft idea... It seems very obvious that shuttlecraft pilots are the new red shirts of Discovery.
Oh, yeah. Those poor shuttlecraft
no
pilots.
No kidding.
They not only do they get killed, but they get killed in the most messed up ways.
Oh, yeah.
One gets jettisoned into the vacuum. Another one, what was the other one? He just got, like, stabbed to death by the Klingons.
Yeah, right? But they almost sliced him in half, it sounded like. There was quite the slicing noise and, like, motion and stuff. It was creepy.
Yeah, I mean, these poor bastards, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so yeah, don't take a shuttle pilot gig.
Yeah, do not be a shuttlecraft operator in Starfleet, whatever you do.
Certainly not in the mid, 23rd century. Don't do it.
One thing I just wanted to sort of shout out to was that love the shots of the Discovery in space. It looks so beautiful. Every just the way they light that thing, and the way the colors mm-hmm. bounce off of it. I think it looks yeah. awesome.
Yeah, they're doing a really awesome job with that. And I didn't always love the way it looked, but it's really growing on me. And I like you said, it's just lit really well. It's really good looking. I also like the shot this week, to go piggyback on that idea, of just the interesting POV shot of, like, as if you were sitting on the saucer section rings as they spin up.
Yeah, that was cool. That was a cool shot.
That was neat. Black alert.
Yeah. Black alert.
Yeah, that was cool. That was
cool.
I know some people are turned off by the rings and all the movement of the primary hull, but I thought it was kind of cool looking myself.
Yeah, that was badass.
And,
at least,
and it has a function now, so it doesn't really bother.
Yeah, there's a certain logic to it, so.
You know, it's too bad that they never had a black alert in TNG, because Riker gives such a good red alert. I can just imagine him doing a black alert.
True. That's, I can totally picture it.
Black alert, shields up.
Yeah, exactly.
All hands to battle stations. So that about does it for this episode of Star Trek Discovery. Next week, right here on Shuttlepod at the Disco, same bad time, same bad channel, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery episode number 6, which is titled Lethe. So L-E-T-H-E, for those wondering. And that will be released next Sunday, October 22nd, in the U.S. and Canada. What do we think is going to happen in episode 6, you guys?
Ooh, so this is interesting, because Lethe is means a couple of different things. It's the river of forgetfulness throughout Hades in the underworld. So, what do they want to forget? What's going on here? And also literally means like oblivion, you know? Like mm-hmm. if you use it standalone as a word. So they both sound pretty ominous. They're both kind of interesting. I kind of wonder if this river of forgetfulness thing doesn't somehow relate to Tyler and his experiences, maybe possibly brainwashing, as a prisoner of war. I don't know, but that's kind of where my brain goes.
Or maybe he's been, maybe he's been brainwashed. So Lethe does flow. It's like you said, it's a river that flows through Hades, and it flows around the cave of Hypnos, like hypnotize.
It's very good.
And legend has it that all those who drank from the river Lethe experienced complete forgetfulness. So maybe he was like reprogrammed.
Yes. So there's a definite chance that maybe he's kind of been Manchurian candidated. You know, he's been turned into a walking sleeper, sort of. We'll see. Yep.
Oh, by the way, Kayla, you got your wish this week. There was no sneak preview.
Oh, good. Well, they did show some stuff on After Trek, though.
They did, but it was totally like out of context. You could never tell like about the plot from it.
I'm so glad. I really hate when, because I don't know what's going to be a spoiler and what's not. So I usually just shut my eyes when that.
That makes me think that they've got something really impressive going on, something really kind of packed in this one, and they don't want to give anything away. You know, because
could be
suddenly
could
be. They didn't do a teaser.
But you know, jumping on the back of that, Brian. They did show a little bit in After Trek, and I have to do a shout out to that, because now we know for sure that those shirts that we've seen, we've seen Aaron Harbert's wearing it's just a black t-shirt and it says in white lettering in all caps Disco, because we knew that Disco was the name they had given to the show sort of behind the scenes on the set and everything. Mm-hmm. But now we know that those shirts are canon, because what they show in After Trek, we see the characters walking around in the mess wearing the Disco shirts.
Right. That's right. I forgot about that.
See, I didn't get to watch After Trek yet.
So. Yeah, the Disco shirts are canon.
Yeah, apparently that's off-duty, you know, casual wear.
I think it's really weird and like a little bit stupid, but I also love it.
I'll have to have a look.
Maybe it's just every shirt. So like the Enterprise, when they would go to the mess, it would say like Enter. Like E-N-T-E, or Enter, E-N-T-E-R. Like you get a five-letter abbreviation on your shirt. So you'd have Enter, Disco.
Oh, boy.
Defy. Instead of Defiant, you know, it's like,
Well, it'd be Defia.
Defia, yeah, I know. Mm.
Oh, boy.
It's not going to work.
Yeah. Anyway, Disco shirts are canon. So deal with it. Hashtag deal with it.
All right.
Another thing that CVS can market, by the way, PJs and disco shirts, everybody.
Oh my gosh, please buy me one as soon as they go on sale. Can we all wear them to...
They will be required, yeah.
Las Vegas next year.
To wear.
All right, you guys. Well, I think that about does it for us then this week at the Shuttle Pod at the Disco. Be sure to tune in next week when we talk about Lethe.
Say goodbye, Kayla.
Goodbye, Kayla.
Exactly. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.